This is the Pittsburgh Section, National Council of Jewish Women, April 1st, 1987. Harold Kimball and Ann Fagan interviewing Mr. Stanley Arnheim. Tape 1, Side 1. Mr. Arnheim, would you please state your full name, your address, and your date of birth?
My name is Stanley W. Arnheim. My address is 334 South Lexington Avenue, Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. I was born September 25th, 1913.
All right, Mr. Arnheim. Let's begin by talking about your childhood, what you remember about those early years, and certainly your parents, your siblings, childhood memories.
Oh, my, that was a long time ago. I was born in Pittsburgh in 1913, and I lived here till I was about 5 years old. For reasons of health, we then moved, for reasons of my mother's health, we moved to Atlantic City. And we lived there a couple of years and then moved to Cleveland, Ohio, where I grew up, graduated from high school, and went on to college.
Your college years were also spent in Cleveland?
No, my college was University of Michigan. I was in the class of 1934, but I didn't graduate. I completed 3 years.
Let's back up and talk a bit about your parents, their countries of origin, the way in which they came to Pittsburgh, if you know that or recall it.
My father was Walter Arnheim. He was born in Pittsburgh. My mother was Mildred Hollander. She was born in Pittsburgh. My father's parents were born in Pittsburgh. And his grandfather was born in Germany. That's my great-grandfather. And he came over to America in 1858 and settled in where did the folks settle?
There you are.
My great-grandfather was born in Germany and came to America and settled in Brookville, Pennsylvania in 1858, which was, I believe, the year that my grandfather was born.
Do you have any knowledge of why he chose that small community in rural Pennsylvania?
No, I really don't. I've tried to research my family history, tried to figure out what it was about that. He was in the lumber business. Mm-hmm. Why he selected that, what relationship that might have had with his life in Germany before he came over here, I've not been successful in finding out.
But it's interesting, your roots then in this community go back to the period before the Civil War.
That's correct.
You, with that long history of time in Pittsburgh, do you have family recollections of what the city was like? You were such a little boy when you left. I don't know how much you recall of Pittsburgh, of western Pennsylvania.
I really don't remember an awful lot of the early history. I know this much, that my grandfather, who was Daniel Arnheim, was in the horse business. And he had stables on the north side, and he also owned property downtown where right now the Gateway center development is erected. And he was very well known, I'm told, because of his horse selling business. He supplied horses to the traction companies for pulling the transit cars, sold horses to many of the fine families in town, and I guess he just wasn't smart enough to know the day the automobile was here and kept on selling horses.
Now, when you were very young, you moved to first Atlantic City and then Cleveland. Do you have memories of those communities that you might want to share with us?
Well, I remember Atlantic City mostly because of my uncle, Jacob Law. That was my mother's brother-in-law. He was married to Sadie Hollander, and he was the Blaw of Blaw Knox. And he was a little bald-headed gentleman with an absolutely pixie sense of humor and a great inventor. He invented the form which Blaw Knox adopted, started them on their way to fame. I can remember him building a little fire truck that I was absolutely fascinated with. And he was a great political bigwig in Atlantic City. And I remember the fame that he had. I can remember the boardwalk. I can remember visiting his house on what was then known as the Inlet in Atlantic City, and it was a very warm and wonderful family, and I enjoyed my contacts with him. And we moved to Cleveland, Ohio, because my father was in the tobacco business, manufactured cigars, and that was a center of his activity. So we took up residence there when I was about 7.
The Cleveland community, do you have some impressions of it as you were growing up, as you became a teenager, particularly when that kind of thing would be important?
Well, we lived in the Cleveland Heights section of the city, which was considered one of the good residential areas. It was near the Shaker Heights area, which was really the high society. Cleveland Heights didn't enjoy that high a reputation, but it was a good section. I had a great many friends and was active in my youth with the things that kids usually are. Great baseball player, great from the standpoint of enthusiasm, not skill. And organized clubs and high school fraternities. I remember trying to be accepted on the high school newspaper because I was interested in journalism. I didn't succeed in that.
Were there connections with the Jewish community in Cleveland? Was your family involved, or was that a significant part of your growing up time there, as you recall?
Well, I must say that while I went to Rabbi Abba Hillel Silver's congregation on East 105th Street, as I believe it was, and was confirmed there. I would not categorize my family as being deeply religious people. And I remember, on my own part, violently objecting to having to study Hebrew in Sunday school, and almost quitting over that. And I never did take it, as a matter of fact. I was confirmed without taking it.
The Rabbi Silver was a rather extraordinary leader. Do you have some memories of him, or did he influence you in any way during the time that you were growing up?
Oh, it'd be nice to say that he did, but I truly can't say that. I knew that even in my youth that this was a great person, and it was an honor to belong to his congregation. It was also, as I recollect, a rather competitive thing, because Rabbi Brickner had a congregation there too, which was closer in, to town as to location, and an older section. And it was sort of a matter of prestige if you belonged to Rabbi Silver's, and others felt that same way about Rabbi Brickner. Our family was not deeply religious, and I was not terribly active in my religious school years. I went and I was confirmed.
Were there teachers or other adults in those early years that were particularly important to you?
I remember one you're talking about religious school?
Any kind of school.
And at what age was that? What age were you then, would you say?
Well, I was between 7 and 14. I remember that a teacher, Rabbi Feuer, F-E-U-E-R, who was a teacher in Rabbi Silver's congregation. And he made Sunday school extremely interesting, because he was just one of us. And I can remember how he would challenge us. The thing that goes through my mind is that we were talking about Nebuchadnezzar at one point, and he asked if anybody in the class could spell. And I volunteered that I could spell it. And he said that before you do it, if you don't do it right, you gotta treat the whole class to lollipops.
Participatory education.
So are you willing to make that wager? And I said, yes. And he said, all right, then spell it, which I did. And I misspelled it. So I had to treat the whole class to lollipops.
That's
I always remember.
That's a nice memory.
I don't know, but he's just... This was the kind of a man he was, and it was just a delight.
Other people during those years, school teachers perhaps, or people in the community, whom you have particularly vivid memories of?
No, I can't think of teachers or people in the community. I was active. I did lots of things.
Were there brothers or sisters? We haven't talked about siblings.
I have an older brother, Richard, who's 5 years older than I, and a younger sister, Ruth, who's now Ruth Linton. She's 2 years younger than I. And we had a normal, ordinary, happy family.
You had mentioned age 14. Did you leave Cleveland at that age?
Oh, no.
Or you were...
No, age 14 was when I was confirmed, which was what I thought the question was.
No, but you were in Cleveland through your adolescent
Cleveland
years.
Until 1980. 33, except for the years when I was at the University of Michigan, mm-hmm. but my home was still in Cleveland. And we lived in Cleveland until my father died in 1933, and then moved back to Pittsburgh nice. Because mother felt that she'd like to be where her family was. We had family still in Pittsburgh, so we returned.
When you left Michigan then at the end of your junior year, you came back to Pittsburgh. Did you begin working at that time?
Yes, I started to work right away. I have to say that when I was at Michigan, I was in the School of Journalism. Mm-hmm. All that I ever wanted to do all my life was write for a newspaper. Huh. And when I left Michigan, I tried desperately to get a position with the Pittsburgh Press or the Sun Telegraph or the Post Gazette without any success whatsoever. I offered to work for nothing if they'd have me, but this was in 1933, which was the depth of the Depression.
Yes.
They weren't hiring people at that time, and without a degree, I guess that made it harder. My uncle, my mother's other brother-in-law, Harry Fleischman, offered to send me back to Michigan to graduate, offered to finance it. And I suppose I should have accepted his generous offer, but I felt with my father's passing, the responsibility of helping support the family. For that reason, declined his generous offer and instead took the only job that I could find at that time, which was clerking in a drugstore, the Sun Drug,
yes.
down on the corner of 6th Avenue and Penn. And I worked there for a year or so until they sent me out to the East Liberty store. And I worked there for a little while until circumstances brought me into other activities.
Would you like to, before you tell us about those other activities, do you have some memories of Pittsburgh as you found it when you returned? There it was, the height of the Depression, as you mentioned earlier on. Are there recollections in your mind of what the city was like when you came back?
At that time, the city was best characterized as being black and dirty and ugly because of the smoke and the soot, the coal mines, from the coal burning in all the steel mills, where it was not unusual to go downtown and high noon and see lights on, automobile lights on, total darkness.
I have a question. Can you compare, do you remember when you were young how Grant Street looked? Was it really muddy, dirty?
No, not my youth. That must have predated me.
Okay.
It was paved as long as I've been.
Well, that's what I remember from another interview, but it must have been.
It must have been an older man.
1800 and something. Okay. Sorry about that.
You're a broth of a boy here.
Right.
We were talking about then the smogginess and the dirtiness of the city. Do you have any sense of the difficulties of the people who were really just trying to make do in such a difficult time? Was that part of your recollection when you returned? Or the struggles in the mills, those kinds of things?
Well, I knew how hard it was to get a job, and I knew how hard it was for me to get a job, and I know that when I went to work for Sun Drug Company, my wages were $15 a week. And I really aspired to greater things than just clerking in a drugstore. And I remember how hard I tried to impress them that I ought to be given an advancement into the office of the Sun Drug Company. I remember going to them and saying that what the company needed was a newspaper, a house organ.
You were still working and being a journalist.
it's just been in me to write. And I persuaded them that without any additional compensation to produce a house organ, which I turned out for at least a year. And I eventually went back to them and asked them if they didn't think I ought to get a raise. Since I had demonstrated my ability to do things like that. They also had sales contests in the drugstore to sell certain kind of merchandise that they were trying to offer. And I was good at selling, and I won a number of those contests. And so for those two reasons, I thought I ought to be compensated more than 15 a week. They told me they would think about it, and if I'd come back in 2 weeks, they'd tell me. So I did come back in 2 weeks. And they closed the door and said, yes, they were going to give me a raise. That effective immediately, my salary is going to be $16 a week. I knew at that point that I had no future in the drug business.
Tell us about your next journey in career establishment.
Would you like me to go back and give you some other recollections?
Sure.
Well, while we were talking about Pittsburgh being dirty and grimy and all, it was running through my mind my recollections of the Great Flood.
Oh, yeah.
1936?
I think so, yeah. Yes. St. Patrick's Day.
Right.
At which time I was still working for Sun Drug. Uh-huh. And I can remember, at that time I was working down at 6th Avenue in Penn, I believe. And seeing the tremendous amount of water that had gone all through the city. And the Sun Drug had asked for volunteers to go down and help clean out the store after the flood was over. And, you know, I volunteered for that and went down, and the mud and the goop and everything. Water had come up, I'd say at least 7 to 10 feet above the store level, and it was a very horrible situation. That's another recollection that I have of the city. I can remember meeting a lot of nice young fellows my own age, which was then around 21, and playing baseball over on the corner of Beechwood Boulevard and Wilkins Avenue, where there now are a number of fine homes, but which at that time were vacant lots.
Did your family live in the Squirrel Hill area?
Yes, when we first came here, we lived on Darlington Road, in the block between Murray and Shady, in a row house, I think half of a double. And then we moved from there to a row house on Denison Avenue, in the 1620 Denison Avenue, which is in the block between Aylesboro and Forbes. We lived there till we lived there till I was married, but we subsequently moved to, after my sister got married, we moved to the Ambassador Apartments, where I lived until I got married.
We do want to talk about that, about your courtship and your marriage, but I'd like to back up now, I think, and go back to what you did when you left Sun Drugstore and how you eventually found yourself in the career path that you chose.
About 1937, when I realized that I had no possible opportunity for advancement in the drugstore. I had done everything I knew. I bought 25 shares of stock at $1 a share, just to, again, show them that I had entrepreneurial instincts. That didn't work, nothing worked. So I started to interview at different places, but without success. And one day while I was clerking in the Sun Drug in East Liberty on Center Avenue, a customer of the drugstore, whose name was Fred Hefner, and who was associated with F.A. Sowash Real Estate, asked me whether I had any interest in going into the real estate business. And I said I didn't know. I didn't know anything about it, what was involved, and so forth. Of course, the conversation, I learned that in order to do so, I had to own a car, which I didn't have. And so I told my, there was no way I could do that because I didn't have enough money to buy a car. So they hired somebody else, and I guess the somebody else didn't work out. And they came back and asked me again. And by this time, I had made up my mind that I had to get out of the drugstore. And I told them I'd let them know in a few days. In the meantime, I talked to my then best friend, and still my best friend, Alexander Spire Jr., who was from a wealthy family. And he and another friend, Morton Levison, lent me the money to buy a Chevy, a second-hand car. And I can't remember what I paid for it, but it could only have been a few $100s. And then I went to Sowash and said, yes, I would accept the job, which I thought was paying me $60 a month plus commissions. But after I got there, they told me I misunderstood them, the pay was only $40 a month and commissions. So that's how I got into the real estate business. I also had to go out and buy a hat. I never owned a hat at that point. They told me that no respectable real estate salesman could hope to succeed without wearing a hat. So I went out, and I can remember buying an all-black hat. It was really more like an undertaker's hat than a salesman's hat.
Am I correct? Is the name Hefner?
H-E-F-N-E-R.
Oh, one F.
Your training as a real estate man then came on the line, so to speak?
Exactly. Exactly on the line. But I, at the beginning, when I remember even then going to night classes and studying advertising and studying salesmanship at the University of Pittsburgh, which had these night classes in the Chamber of Commerce building. And I remember predicting courses from a man who was in the advertising business. His name escapes me for the moment, but very well known. But it wasn't until I had left SoWash to go with another company that I really started to take classes in real estate at the University of Pittsburgh.
Let me just interrupt. How long were you with SoWash before you left?
I wasn't with SoWash very long.
What happened to Hefner? I have here. You took the job at Hefner Realty, or is that wrong?
SoWash Realty.
Oh, I got this
right. Mr. Hefner was the... partner of SoWash's, who offered me the position.
I see.
And I was with that firm a few months. My job then was to lease houses.
That would be rental, or we?
Rental.
I see, yes.
To rent single family houses that were listed with them for rent. And in addition to the salary that I got of $40, no auto expense money or reimbursement for anything at all, you got $10 every time you leased a house, unless it was a very expensive one, in which case you got $15. And in the course of doing